Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of the Marketplace Discussions podcast. My name is Mahmoud Resmi, and today's conversation is with Joy Batra, author of The Freelance Mindset, Unleashing Your Side Hustles for Better Work, Play, and Life. Joy holds a dual degree in law and MBA from Harvard University. She is founder of Quartz Consulting, a freelance consulting firm that has advised startups, venture capital firms, and Fortune 500 companies. She previously worked at Goldman Sachs, Gunderson Dettmer, and JioSaavn, very briefly as Bollywood actress, and most recently as head of legal at Syndicate Protocol. Hope you enjoyed today's conversation. If you want to keep up to date with future episodes, make sure to click on the subscribe button. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to leave them in the comments section below if you're on YouTube, or feel free to reach out to me at decafquest on Twitter or Instagram. Hello, Joy. Thank you very much for agreeing to do this. I'm very excited to have a discussion with you today about your book, Freelance Mindset. And my first question basically is just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Thank you so much for having me. Yes, I'd love to tell you more about myself. So for me, my path has been a little complicated, a little winding one. I started in a very traditional path. I worked in investment banking in New York, and then I went to law school and business school thinking that I would kind of do climbing the career ladder as it had been explained to me my whole life. But as I got closer to graduation and was about to take the bar exam, which I did take, I realized that, you know, starting this corporate life would mean letting go of a part of myself that I really loved and I wanted to continue exploring. And for me, that was the creative side, that was acting and dancing. But I didn't know how to make that a reality because I didn't know anybody who was working in the arts professionally. So what I did was I went to India, where my family is from, and I visited them, and I thought, okay, you know, I love Bollywood. Maybe I'll just, you know, hang out in the coffee shops, take a class or something and have a little immersive experience and then come back and start my adult real job. Life had a different plan for me. I ended up going and taking an acting class as I had hoped to do, but then I got an audition, and the audition led me to get a talent management agreement to work for one of the production houses as an actor. And then all of a sudden, out of the blue, I really had to face this choice of, do I go down the traditional path that had been set out for me that I had always been planning to do, or do I take this risky path of adventure that I had never seen before and I don't know where it would lead? It was far less stable, but it was calling to me at the end. And we wouldn't be here today if you don't know, you know how this ends, is I had to take that path of adventure and risk. And I accepted this acting contract in India and let go of the corporate job that I had agreed and had always planned to do. Now, all of a sudden, I'm in India and I'm an actor. I'm not making very much money. When I do, it's in rupees, and I have six-figure student loans in dollars back home. Oh, I know. So I needed cash fast. And I thought, but I also needed time for auditions. So I started pitching myself out as a freelancer and asking companies if they had any small projects I could do, maybe remotely even. And what ended up happening was I had this mix of work where I would spend my mornings on corporate work, on like spreadsheets and PowerPoints. And then in the afternoon, I would put that away and I would go and audition for films and TV and commercials. And what I found was that life of a freelancer allowed me to do both the analytical and the creative. And that was actually my dream job, which I could never have expected to exist and never have written this down in advance. And so there I was, a freelancer and the only one I knew at the time. Now, today, freelancing is different. Lots of people are doing it. People have side hustles. But every time someone's doing it, they're kind of wondering, you know, where do I start? How do I make the leap? And how do I kind of get both the stability that I know and love from the corporate world and also the excitement, the autonomy, the creativity from this other side of myself? So after helping a few friends kind of work through this themselves, I thought, okay, well, I should write this down. And then I thought, as I got into writing it, you know, I know how it works for me and how it's working for my friends, but there are millions of freelancers out there. How is it working for everybody? And so then I sat down, I had coffee with about 50 freelancers, and I found out what their journey was and, you know, what was the hardest part for them, what surprised them, and took all of that and packaged it together and turned it into this book, The Freelance Mindset, which came out earlier this month. And now that book is how I believe we found each other through social media.
I stumbled on the book actually a few days before it was published on Twitter. I think it was Dory Clark who posted the picture. Yeah, that's how I saw it. And then for many reasons, I think it was the word mindset that caught my attention, because it's I teach philosophy. I've been doing that for over 10 years now. I'll tell you more about why this is particularly of interest to me. But then I've been thinking about mindset over the past few months, even a year or so, like having a mindset of some sort. And so freelance mindset, it caught my attention. Bought the audiobook, listened to it the first time. I was like, yeah, I really like this book, because it's not your typical how-to. And this is, I think, also what made it interesting for me. So you, as you said, you first talk about your experience, which you just mentioned, and then the interviews with all these other people who were freelancing. And then you just lay it out. It's like, these are the pros, these are the cons. There are so many things you have to keep in mind, health insurance, etc. And so you're just laying it out there, and it's up to the reader or listener to kind of decide where they are. And it's very, very helpful, I think. So many things I want to ask you about. But first off, going back to your journey, because you said like you accepted the risk and the adventures, and you structured the book based on this hero journey, right? And this also caught my attention, because it's interesting. How did you kind of, like, it's a leap of faith, right? You're just saying, okay, I have to do this. I don't know if it was a calling, or you're like, yeah, let me just take the plunge. How did you take that leap of faith? What was your thought process?
Well, I was absolutely terrified at that time. I was trying to think and plan it all out. I had this 5-year, 10-year plan of, you know, I'll work at a law firm, I'll be there for, you know, X number of years, and then hopefully become senior associate, and then maybe one day a partner. And that didn't have any analog in this world of being an actor and being a freelancer. And I said, oh my gosh, like, how do I even structure this? So for me, you know, there were two things. One was the fact that there was this intuitive calling that was so strong that I really couldn't pass it up. I had wanted to do this, and suddenly the opportunity was there. And I felt like I had asked for it and it had arrived. And how could I say no, was one element of it. But on the other side, there was all this fear. I mean, $100,000 plus student loans is a lot of money. I don't know if I would be able to make it back. I didn't know if I'd be able to go to a law firm after saying no the first time. And so what I tried to do was think about, like, okay, how can I get my financial situation under control so that I can take this leap of faith? Like, what are the things that I need to do? For me in that moment, what I needed to do was, like, forbear my student loans, like take a couple months to hold off on the payments. And then I needed to figure out approximately, like, how much do I need to live if I'm staying, you know, with family, or if I get my own apartment, what can I do? And then I found one anchor client early, even before I went to India, and it wasn't a lot of money. It was very small, but it was enough to help me with living, like, the small incidental. So I would be able to pay for some food, and I'd be able to cover some amount of rent. And I was like, okay, between that and a little bit of savings I have, I'm going to be okay for X number of months. And so I took the adventure with X number of months in mind. Then I got on the ground and I thought, okay, X number of months at that time was like 3 months. But I said, okay, to be an actor, it really takes a little bit of time. 3 months is, I'm going to be studying acting, I'm going to be studying Hindi, doing some auditions. It's not going to be like I will have a contract in 3 months' time. So I gave myself until, this was September, so I gave myself until March, which was not a lot of time. But I thought, okay, if I can get a couple of projects in that time, I'll know by March if I should then, so 6 months later, if I should stay as an actor, or if I should make the move and come back and deal with my student loans and kind of make an adult life as I thought I could. So for me, it was really a matter of taking stock of all of my fears. Some of them were just irrational or like more emotional type of fears, like, what will my classmates think? You know, will people judge me? Which are not small. Like, I didn't know anybody who was doing this, and it was frightening. But then there were the other ones that I could really tackle in a more concrete way, which was, how much money do I need to live, and how can I start, you know, like, how can I stop the bleeding? and make sure that I'll be able to float, and how long do I need to be able to float for? So that was kind of how I approached it in the beginning.
So it was on the one hand a leap of faith, but on the other hand, you actually studied the situation and you had some sort of client before you went there. And you do talk about this, right? Before you decide whether or not you want to become a freelancer, well, don't just jump into it. Go all in, just study where you are, do the cost analysis, fixed variable, but at the minimum, and just like you said, have some sort of runway and then proceed accordingly, you know? So it's interesting. And before we discuss the freelance bit, I'm also curious about your experience as in Bollywood, kind of. Tell us a little bit about that. How was it?
I mean, it was nothing like I could have imagined before. I had this classmate who was in my dance team in college, and she was a beautiful dancer. And after college, she went to India and she became an actor and became a professional dancer. And all through grad school, I was in Boston in the snow, and I would go to the library, and I was supposed to be studying, but you know how social media is, and I would be looking on the internet, and I'd see these videos and photos of her dancing under palm trees, and I was like, oh, I want that. And I didn't know how that was possible, if that was possible. Turned out, yes, it was possible. I too could dance under palm trees. It was risky, it was expensive, and there were a lot of other things that went along with it, but yeah, it was there. And so the beauty of it was really getting to be able to create a life that fit exactly both my strengths and my needs. So I thought that I, you know, would want to dance under palm trees all day long, and that would be the dream. But it turned out for me, like, dancing under palm trees is great, but I also need to be able to solve really analytical problems, sometimes numerical problems, sometimes things that I can plan several steps in advance. And that gives me a sense of, you know, feeling empowered, feeling a little bit more energized. So the experience was a little bit of trial and error of, like, you know, what is the right ratio of the creative for me, which was, you know, this freedom of dancing and acting, which was also work, but a very different kind of less linear kind of work. And then the much more structured of the spreadsheets and the Excel. So, I mean, it was great to be able to slide up and down that spectrum, to meet other folks. The friends that I met out there were incredible. All of them had also left their homes. Many of them were also, coming from an Indian family. Many of them were engineers or professionals of some sort that their families had really strongly encouraged them to pursue. But they also had this dream and this calling, and were also figuring out, you know, what is the right balance? How can I follow what feels exciting and intuitive to me while also doing, you know, what makes sense for my family, what people expect, and have very real reasons to be worried if I'm not necessarily, you know, having a solid plan for how I'm going to pay my bills. But it was absolutely beautiful. It was the best year of my life. And I'm so glad that I took that risk. And for anybody out there who's thinking about something that's calling them very strongly, please explore it. Figure out how to do it safely. You know, manage your risk, figure out how much money you need, and try and solve for that. But solve for that so you can go and see if there's a way that you can bring this into your life in a bigger form.
Based on what you said and taking the leap at having this fear, not only of whether or not you're going to be able to make it, but also what your friends, family, peers, etc. are going to be thinking about. I really liked the fact that you used movies as examples. And the one that comes to mind in this particular case is, was it Romy and Michelle's high school reunion?
Yes,
I
a
have
classic.
Not watched it. Yeah, but I will. It's on the list. And the other movie, I cannot even pronounce it, but you know what? Which one?
Band Baja Barat. Yeah. It's a Bollywood movie.
Yeah. So, but it's kind of, yeah. You would think that your progress would be linear, corporate world, etc. And this is kind of the measure or metric of success. But then taking a different kind of career path might add the stress of how can I, what would others think about me now? My peers, as you said, like in my school reunion or whatever that is. And then friends, family, and whatnot, right? You mentioned your father had expected you to become a lawyer, etc. So my question would be, first off, how did you deal with it yourself on a personal level, or the identity stuff? And in general, kind of, what are your thoughts about all that?
For those who haven't watched Romy Michelle's reunion, let me just Romy Michelle's high school reunion. Let me just quickly give the story. It's Romy. I believe she was the one of the lead actresses in Friends, Phoebe, and her best friend. They go back for their high school reunion, and you know, at the time they go back, neither of them has a date. They don't have kids. They don't have a full-time job. They really have nothing to impress their classmates with, and they get to the reunion, and everyone is suddenly so dazzling and so magnificent. They're like, well, how do we impress them? And they come up with this cover story of having invented something that they think nobody knows who the inventor is. So they choose Post-its and they say, okay, we'll pretend we've invented Post-its and everybody will be impressed and then we'll win this reunion. And, you know, of course, hijinks ensue and they don't quite get away with it. And they have to kind of come to this terms of accepting themselves and accepting the life that they have created and embracing it for all the beautiful and complicated and wonderful possibilities that it still has. And it has a happy ending, which I will say, I will not spoil it for you. But for me, it was similar. And I didn't have this movie in mind when I was going through it. I wish I had thought of the movie back then. It only kind of came to me many years later in the writing process. But the first thing I realized was that I had to give myself space to process this. And when I was making a decision of going to corporate law versus going into acting, you know, could very quickly tell like who was going to be supportive of that decision and who was going to give me, you know, a little bit of constructive feedback or some pushback in a different way. And I knew that I was still figuring it out. So I first started with people who were very supportive and tried to understand, you know, how are they encouraging me and how can I protect this bubble and why is it that I even want to explore this side of myself? Can I give myself space? And slowly, once I worked out what it was that I was trying to do, then I started to expand the sphere of people that I would share this with. But in the very beginning, when I went to India, the only people I told were my mom, one of my best friends, and like two of my cousins. Like people didn't know, even though I had many classmates who lived in that city and many of my other, you know, friends and classmates elsewhere. I just kind of kept a low profile. I was not on social media at the time. I thought, let me just give this a shot for me and see what happens. And then I can share it when I feel ready to share. And over time, I started expanding that, but there were times when I expanded it too soon. So I had my own reunion of sorts, and I came back to my 5-year business school reunion, and everyone's going around the table saying what they've been up to in the last 5 years. And they all have these super impressive job titles that everybody understood. And I was like, I'm a freelancer. And nobody knew what to do with that. And, you know, least of all me, because I hadn't quite figured out what freelancing meant to me, where I was going with it, and what I was solving for. So for, you know, if you're going through this journey yourself, I really encourage you to let yourself experience that. And that may mean giving yourself privacy, or that might mean being more open about it, but know what's making you comfortable and know how it's impacting you. How are other people's opinions helping you, or are they hindering you? And can you create the bubble that you need? And once you've kind of given yourself a little space to work that out, then work on your elevator pitch and how are you going to communicate what it is that you do to someone who has no context. Like there may not even be malicious, but they just don't understand because they've never seen it done before. So how can you communicate the value in a way that will resonate in their language that they can then apply, maybe even be inspired by, but really understand and know how to plug it in? Because at the end of the day, people are just trying to figure out where you are, how do you fit in, and what can you talk about? What do you have in common? So to the extent that you can provide that in a nice little packaged way, like I'm a freelancer, I do strategy consulting in the morning, and then I act in films and audition in the afternoon, that might be more clear than just, I don't know, I'm on an adventure. But both are interesting.
Yeah, you do talk about putting it into three different categories as well as per, I think, a coach or a psychologist. But yeah, I have two questions in mind here. But first, I'll start with the stigma surrounding the freelancing, because you do talk about it. Like why is it that when you say, oh, you're a freelancer, then it's somehow you don't know what you're doing and you don't know where you're heading and you're just like whatever works, versus if you say I'm self-employed of some sort, then it has a different ring to it. So why is there such a stigma surrounding freelancing?
It's absolutely wild. If you tell people you're an entrepreneur, all of a sudden everyone's fascinated impressed. Exactly. Wow, what is this?
Whoa, fascinating stuff.
And then if you say you're a freelancer, people, just like you said, you know, they don't know what to do with it. And after thinking about it a lot, I realized that it's because of what an entrepreneur is solving for versus what a freelancer is solving for. So for an entrepreneur, especially if you've taken outside funding, you're trying to increase your revenue, you're trying to increase your valuation, and you're trying to scale a business to some much larger financial, like quantifiable impact that other people know what to measure you against and they understand how to value it. And that game is very difficult to do, but it's very simple to understand what the person is solving for. With freelancing, the beauty and the challenge both is that you have your own definition of success. So for some freelancers, you might be freelancing to maximize your financial gain, and that's wonderful and totally respectable, but it's not what every freelancer is solving for. You make your own definition of success. So other freelancers are solving for something like time, you know, the ability to be there for, with their families or, you know, care for a loved one, et cetera. Other freelancers are solving for creative fulfillment and the ability to express themselves in a way that they can't do in their day job. So, you know, there are, you know, three core things that freelancers do solve for, which is, you know, money, time, and creativity. But those aren't communicated when you meet somebody. And when you tell somebody you're freelancing, it could be any one of those three. And people, again, don't necessarily have a model, don't know how to compare you to others. And so they don't know what your definition of success is. And you might be incredibly successful by doing an unpaid short film on the side because this is your dream to act or film, even though it's bringing you no money whatsoever, but that is your dream and that's what freelancing brought you. And so I think for freelancers, that's one of the opportunities we have is to communicate to ourselves first, what will success in freelancing look like for me? Because then I know what to pursue and how to kind of iterate on that based on the projects that I'm getting. And then also to communicate that to others and explain why you like freelancing. Like, what is it that has drawn you to freelancing and what is it that keeps you there?
This is quite interesting because you do talk about this, right? Before you even like in answering the question, should or why should I freelance? Have the end goal in mind. It's like, why are we doing it? Is it because we want more money, lifestyle design? Is it because I want to pursue several projects, etc.? And I think you're right in this case. Like the entrepreneur kind of image that we have is someone who's trying to scale a business, whereas freelancers, they might be interested in that eventually, depending on where they are. But then maybe others are just want to have some free time. They want to pursue other things. They maybe don't know what they want to pursue. And they're trying, you know, this, you talk about it, the jungle gym, I think, right? Pivoting from one category to the other, if you don't know what you're doing. So this also resonates with me personally, because first, unlike you, it wasn't a choice for me to start freelancing. I was contemplating leaving my job, etc., but then economic crisis hit the country, my salary devalued. I was like, I cannot pay rent anymore. So yeah, it turned out to be a, you know, a happy ending in my case so far. But I did not have this choice, and I didn't even know what I wanted to do or how I can make money. 2 years, 3 years later, I still don't know. But I'm managing somehow. And this is the thing. It's like when people ask me, like, what do you do? Just like you said in your book, there was this writer, I think it was a writer who was, his wife called him unemployable.
Yes.
Or he called himself unemployable. So I called myself unemployable at one point on Twitter. That was way before I wrote to you. But and then I branded myself as a bridge dweller at one point. And well, now it's a new branding. But the idea is I really don't know how I can present myself. So after this book, I've started thinking about, okay, what is it that I'm doing? How can I categorize myself? But it's also quite important. It's like people ask me what do you do? I'm like, if I knew, I would tell you. I don't know. I teach, I do consulting, I have a podcast. So yeah, it's kind of tricky in my case. But any tips for me in that case?
Yeah. First of all, I'm so sorry. And it's not uncommon that freelancing is a decision that's made for you by the market as opposed to something that you've chosen yourself. Full disclosure, I also just got laid off a couple of weeks ago, so I am also freelancing. I know this is breaking news. I haven't announced it
sorry
anywhere,
to
but you
hear
are the
that
first
as
to
well.
hear.
Ouch, sorry. Yeah, it must be. Yeah.
So, I mean, sometimes the decision is made for us. And if you can have an anchor client in the beginning, that's great. But sometimes you don't, and you just have to land on your feet and figure it out. And millions of freelancers, including you and both of us, hopefully, will figure this out. And so what you do then in that moment is you're really trying to solve for what will bring me cash, and then also thinking about what you will enjoy. And those may be separate things, but when you have to figure out paying your rent and everything, start there. What can I do that will bring in income quickly? And how can I just kind of, you know, stop the bleeding a little bit, so to speak? And that will give you time to think and iterate. It will also give you information about what you like to do, because it may not be the same kind of work that you were just, you know, made to leave from. So I think it sounds like you've got your finances are somewhat, you know, you're managing, and it sounds like they're stable there. But what you like to do and how to answer that question of what you do when somebody asks is so challenging and also so important, because when someone's asking you what you do, they're trying to think about in their network, like who can they introduce you to and what projects would be helpful to you. And we know from the research that the vast majority of freelancers get their opportunities through word of mouth. That's where most of the jobs and most of the highest paying projects come from, both. So nailing that elevator pitch is super important. And I love that you have the book like effectively memorized. Thank you. There's this pyramid principle, which McKinsey uses, and it was from Barbara Minto, who is, I believe she was an organizational psychologist, but I may be wrong about her exact title. But she, you know, really researched that three is the maximum number of buckets people can hold in their mind at any given point in time. So if you're introducing yourself as somebody with multiple careers in your portfolio, max out at three. So look at everything you like to do and then try and organize it. If it's more than three, are there any categories things get lumped into? So for example, I'll use the arts because it's more accessible to me right now. If I'm a writer, actor, and photographer, how do I bring those together? I would say, you know, I work in film and TV, maybe that might be the way to do it, or entertainment or media, one simple category. And then there are other buckets, you know, one might be strategy consulting. And then a third, let's borrow yours, is the podcast. So that is three topics. People can then, you know, put you into a bucket to the extent that you can find one common theme around them that ties them all together. And you do this beautifully when you talk about philosophy and you talk about mindset, that really connects all the dots, even though they have different manifestations. And that helps people organize. And then I think the last thing you can do is also give them a concrete example of either your favorite project, your most recent project, or the project that you really wish you could do. And, you know, giving somebody a mental model of what it is that you can match into is super helpful for them. It's also very helpful for you to clarify what would be good, what feels good, and what is available, like what is the market willing to pay you for. And you get all of this information and you then iterate on it the next time. Like if you say you want to do something, I don't know what example you would give in this case. Maybe it's a very specific type of podcast with a very specific type of guest, and that's just not available in the market at this time. Well, then you know, okay, this is not a revenue generating opportunity. I might be able to work on it as a moonshot, as a side hustle, but when people ask me what to do, what I do, I'm gonna focus on the ones that bring me cash and are much more easy for people to grasp, because you're doing that so you can fund your entire portfolio and keep all of those aspects going.
Yeah, and in your case, I think you had, when you went to the Slashy Summit, that was a writer you were presenting yourself as. Is it still kind of your end goal?
Yeah, so Slashy Summit is, for those who don't know, it's a conference hosted by Brown Girl Magazine, which used to be a client of mine. And it's in New York, and basically everybody who's a creative who has multiple careers is a multi-hyphenate. So like an actor slash lawyer are called slashies. And at this summit, we had to create name tags and put all of our different slashies on the name tag. And so for me, I believe I put, you know, lawyer and some other things. And then I wanted to write a book, and I had done, you know, nothing that anybody could look at that point. This was many years ago. And I thought, okay, am I a writer? Well, I want to be. So I put it on. And yes, for me, now I do have a book. I can technically call myself an author, but it is very important. Writing has turned out to be a very, very valuable process for me for self-reflection, also for communicating to people. I think it's been great. I get to meet people like you and share my journey and hear your journey.
I had another question in mind, but given that you've mentioned that, how was it like the writing process, not the freelance bit, like the shut up and write places, but like getting in contact with people who did it? And how did you, like, how was the process? Because I imagine it's interesting. That's something I like doing, right? So just get in touch with people and ask them a few questions. So yeah, how was it?
Absolutely. I mean, that seems to be so core to your podcast, and it's how we met. That's wonderful. And it was the most beautiful part of writing. Like, I loved the self-reflection and all, but getting to meet people who have been doing this, have been coming up against these same challenges that I was grappling with, and who wanted to talk to me about their story. It's the most wonderful feeling in the world, and to find them out there. So the way I did that was, there were a few people in my network that I already knew who had some sort of freelance business or aspirations, and I talked to them. And then each person kind of knew one person. And so we expanded outward from there. And they led me to some very interesting people who also led me to interesting people. But then there were the moonshots, and there were these fascinating people who I had read about in the media and I wanted to talk to. And one of them is in chapter one, David Dimitri. He is the one man circus, and he was reviewed in the Washington Post. He has been, you know, he worked at the Big Apple Circus, the Metropolitan Opera. He's done everything. He trained at Juilliard and is a phenomenal circus performer and artist. And I just sent him a cold email and I said, oh, please. I prayed and I hoped he would respond. And he ended up being one of the kindest human beings, shared his story, has been a very big part of this book and its journey. And, you know, the book having this as a vehicle to get to access people that I would never otherwise have had an opportunity to reach out to, it's been amazing. And it's absolutely changed my life. And it's one of the things that I think is most exciting about writing, is actually the talking to people and getting to meet people. And I hope that that will continue to be a part of my journey. Definitely, if I do another book, interviews will be a huge, huge part of it.
It's quite fascinating and interesting, because because you talk about the importance of having a tribe of mentors, people you look up to, role models, etc. Has this created some sort of community for you? Is this the sort of community you were looking for? Or did you also create another community on the side to help each other out, freelancing, or maybe a different kind of community? So yeah, my question is about communities in general here. Yeah.
Having this kind of mentor that you can look up to is so important, because for freelancers, we're charting our own path. And so it's not like we know who's ahead of us on this career ladder. We can't point to a specific job title always. Sometimes you can, but you can't, you know, it's not like working in the office and you see somebody with a corner office and you're kind of walking to your desk and saying, one day I will sit in that corner office. It's not like that. So what I learned from talking to all of these freelancers is, some people had a very clear model of who they wanted their career to look like. That was especially the case in things like film or design, or even writing, where people were focused on one particular aspect, one particular craft, and they knew how to kind of measure what success looked like for them in terms of growth. So that could mean a bigger job title, that could mean a bigger platform, more money. And that was very quantifiable for them. But for other people with their portfolios of careers, so there is a dancer / startup founder / design consultant named Ramitha who I interview. And for her, she has actually a portfolio of mentors. So for dance, she knows what she wants. For entrepreneurship, she knows what like an ideal founder would look like as a role model. And then for consulting, she also has people, and she picks and chooses what she likes from each one of those, and uses that aspirationally to then craft something that's very unique to her. But in terms of creating community, yes, absolutely. This book is starting to bring freelancers out of the woodwork. And not only are there the 50 of us who shared our stories, but also people now who, in the process of sharing the book itself, like yourself, are coming into the fold and starting to create community. And my hope is that this will become something a little more organized, where everybody can find each other. But right now, like freelancing, it's quite decentralized, and it's given us an opportunity and a platform for us to talk to each other about it, and a place to start looking, and also a template to start that interaction. But in terms of a community, we're in the very early stages of building it.
And I think this is why the book is very interesting, Because you start with Dimitri's example. I cannot pronounce the French, but is it like the one man circus? No,
absolutely, you nailed it. I can't pronounce the French either.
Le cirque or something, but like you started with the unorthodox example, right? It's like, so you might have, or people might buy the book and think, oh yeah, we're going to start with your typical, oh, this guy is a graphic designer and they're freelancing. But no, you started with this guy started his own circus because he was fed up and was looking for new stuff to do. And so freelancing does not necessarily mean one particular set of skills like people might associate, you know, journalists, photographers, or in the case of movie directors and stuff like that. Basically, anything or anyone can become a freelancer if they're brave enough.
I think so, yes. And to some extent, we're all starting our own one-person circus, but it may not look like we're walking the, you know, the high
juggling
wire
or
the
tight,
exactly, juggling. Yeah, I have a very broad definition of who's a freelancer. And for me, you're a freelancer if you have the mindset of a freelancer. So you may even have a full-time job that is, yeah.
No, exactly. Yeah. It's the mindset. Yeah, but
yeah.
To continue for
yeah, totally. And you might have a full-time job that brings in your income, but you know that you identify bigger than that full-time job. You know that that's a part of your identity, and there are all these other things you care about, whether that's another career, another interest or skill that you have, or if it's things like your health or your family or your relationships, and just managing all those together in a portfolio where your job is one piece, as opposed to this version that we've been told of climbing the corporate ladder where, you know, you work for your job and you just ascend on that, and they're going to essentially kind of plan your life for you or with you and be the source of, you know, your relationships, your community, give you maybe health benefits and everything else. Rather, you're solving for yourself and you're kind of a solopreneur.
Yeah, and this is kind of quite interesting also, because you're not saying, even throughout the book and even towards the end, your conclusion is not, okay, now leave your job and start freelancing. No, your conclusion is do whichever works for you, but keep in mind that having a portfolio of, and here I'm going to use a term based on another community, the Small Bets community. I don't know if you know Daniel Vassallo. He is kind of, you know, establishing this community of people who want to make small bets. Like, just like you say, right? Because if you have a job and you think you're going to climb the ladder to success, yes, but then at any point in time, you're going to lose your job. So if you don't have anything to hedge that risk, then you'll find yourself maybe in 10, 20 years, you lose your job and you notice that you don't have the skills, you haven't grown, you basically accepted the status quo, and you might find it difficult to cope with the scenario. Like, I'm pretty sure that in your case, now this unfortunate kind of event happened, you lost your day job, you will land on your feet because you have the skills, you have the network, you've been doing it. It's not something that is new to you. And this is the most important part. People can lose their jobs at any time. They go into it because of the stability and because they would think freelancing has all sorts of risk. You talk about them, health insurance, etc. But then you don't want to lose your job. You don't want to leave your job. It's okay. But then have some sort of a side hustle on the side, or cultivate this mindset so that if something were to go wrong, you wouldn't feel, or you would land on your feet, basically.
It's so important to do that. Jobs feel stable, and they can be stable, if you're lucky, they are. But they really depend on luck, and it's not on you entirely. The market is volatile, and employers are solving for a business, and they're not necessarily solving for you as a human being. So the message that came out over and over again, both from the freelancers and also from my own experience, is that freelancing can make you more secure than having a full-time job. And there's this one story of a woman. Her name is Tamala, and she was a film director. Oh, I love that you know this. This is so great. And she was a film director in New York, and she was trying to be, you know, she had an MBA as well, and she was trying to be a professional and kind of do the adult thing. She accepted a job in San Diego, across the country from New York, moved there, got an apartment, settled into this full-time job, and within a couple of months, she was laid off. And she, you know, had this moment of, wait, what? Like, this was supposed to be the stable path, and here I am starting from scratch all over again. And she moved back to New York, and, you know, there was a moment of rebuilding, and she did land on her feet eventually, and now she is a producer, director, actor, and she also, I believe, consults on the side, and she has a very robust career. But freelancing gives you that ability to take care of yourself in a way that a full-time job does not. And we can become dependent or very comfortable in full-time jobs sometimes, but we forget that they are temporary and we are at-will employees, at least in the United States, and that can end at any moment. So for me, unfortunately, yes, my full-time job has ended unexpectedly, but luckily, two things were there. One is that I had this experience of freelancing, so I know already how to find clients. I know how to structure my day, and I feel very confident now I'm going back to being a freelancer. I know that I can handle it because I know what that looks like. The other piece is because I had been a freelancer, I was freelancing on the side with my company's permission, so I already had some clients ongoing. I also had other aspects of my identity because I've written a book. I have other things that I'm working on. So this was just one piece of my identity, one loss that I have to mourn in this overall picture of a human being. It was not the central focus. And that's really important because as a freelancer, projects end unexpectedly. You know, you might sign on for a few months and then the company's needs change or whatever, but you always have a portfolio and you're used to things coming and going and you know how to pitch and you know how to pick yourself up. So not only does freelancing give you that financial stability and resilience because you have multiple sources of income or multiple small bets, as you said, which I love, but you also have that emotional resilience because you know that your identity is not coming from any one single place and you can see yourself as bigger and separate. And that helps you grow through these moments that are difficult and happen to all of us.
Yeah, especially this, you do talk about grieving the loss of one identity, and it's okay. Like, people might not understand how important it is, but then yeah, it's like it's okay to grieve over that, but then if you have multiple income streams, or at least you have tried to maybe grow your skills, improve, look for new ventures, etc., you would be able to deal with it. Like, okay, fine, you lost your job, but then it's not the end of the world. And these are two different things that are important as well. You talk about, on the one hand, how important it is to just not only focus on external kind of the external world and extrinsic motivation as well, or be maybe governed by all these external or extrinsic motivations, things like you said, like climbing up the ladder in your corporate job, but also to be mindful first of the inner circle and your immediate kind of, or your inner world and your immediate circle. And do you think that this is something that we've taken for granted? People just go for a job because this is what everyone does, and they forget about these other layers? Like, what do you really want to do? And what about your people in your inner kind of circle? And then the external world. And this is important for me as someone who teaches philosophy, right? Sometimes I ask a question and then people start thinking and they're like, how did I not, or it shows that they have not considered this before, or it's not something that they've thought about. Is this something, I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's in these moments where we're tested, where the world is disrupted, the things that we know to be true are no longer the same. And there's some change, there's some flux, where we then come back to the fundamentals and realize, ah, yes, I actually do have these multiple layers. My perspective had shifted. I had thought one aspect of my life was my entire life, but no, I mean, losing a job is similar to going through a breakup. You realize, I have to rebuild my identity. I am a whole person outside of this relationship, outside of this job. And then you remember, okay, I have myself, I have my immediate community. Then there's also this big wide world out there, which might be, you know, in a dating context, it might context, it might be plenty of fish in the sea, but in an employment context, it's the market, it's the opportunities that are available to you, and who is going to hire you, who is going to present something new to you. And all of those different layers are there, and we have to honor all of those, whether the change has been made for us or whether we're actively in the process of making the change. And once we kind of negotiate through these layers, we can come up with a decision that, you know, feels grounded, feels thoughtful. And I just want to say for anybody, going back to my previous answer about freelancing and in the context of a job loss, even if you haven't freelanced before and you are facing a job loss, I have faith that you can figure it out. And that's not necessarily you, Mahmood, I know you can figure it out because you have, but like anybody who's listening here, you can, and millions of freelancers have done it before. And this means that the next time you're in this situation, you will be more resilient and be stronger. So the growth that you're going through right now is difficult, but it's building you up to be much stronger for the rest of your career and for your life. So hopefully you can find some meaning in the challenges right now, but it will, you will kind of land on your feet, even if it's going to take some time. So keep putting yourself out there, keep pitching, and know that all these three different worlds will sort themselves out. You just keep showing up.
Yeah, and this is, again, this is why it all resonates, because this I kind of have been going through all these realizations over the past few years. I've even written articles about them. I did not want to pester you with all these links on Twitter, but then I only sent one article. But yeah, like putting yourself and putting your work out there is very important, because this is how, in my case, opportunities arose. And one of the most important opportunities ever, I would not have expected that before, happened because someone at an institution saw an Instagram post of mine and they were like, oh, I like that. And they asked me if I would be interested in collaborating with them. We had a chat and then we closed the deal. I couldn't have imagined before at any point in time that I would be able to do it. And the Instagram post was made in Canva. So I was doing all these kind of carousels. So I needed to learn a new skill, design a bit. Right, the aesthetics, make it aesthetically pleasing, and put philosophy content in there to make it accessible for people. So growth and gaining new skills are also important, because you do talk about this. I did not think about this when I was teaching at university. I was a university professor for 7 years. I never thought to myself, I need to do a, well, Canva might have not existed back then, but you know, it's like the idea is I didn't think it would be necessary. But then this is why it's also important to gain skills, even if you have a full-time job.
Absolutely. Nope. Absolutely. It keeps you in forward motion and it keeps you growing.
And I know we're at time, so, and I have, let me just see here if there's anything. Oh yeah, that's, before we end the discussion, it's been really amazing, at least to me. Thank you very much. But this is more of an observation. Throughout your book, you've always been talking about, you know, you mention one extreme and the other extreme, and then you talk about the balance. And I felt this is a very Aristotelian approach, like from Aristotle. And you're like, okay, for example, in times of abundance, you say this is when you should kind of cut back and save. And in time of scarcity, you have to go the other way in order to find the middle ground. And I just thought this was very, very interesting. Like the searching for the middle ground. I think in times of extreme partisanship, and everyone gets excited about all sorts of stuff, right? It's like, it has to be fanaticism, like, you know, ChatGPT, yeah, we're all in, and, or I don't know, no, I against ChatGPT. It's like, why can't we just take a step back and try to, you know, find the middle ground and act accordingly? So I just thought this was really, really, really interesting. Like, I really like this kind of balanced approach towards things. So thank you very much. I don't know if there's anything you'd like to add or any final comments.
Oh, thank you. I really enjoyed this conversation. I'm so glad that you messaged me on Twitter. And for anybody who is listening to this, send the cold message. Send that cold message that you have been thinking about, that you've been too afraid to send. I know I have many that have changed the course of my life as well. Put yourself out there and yes, keep growing, keep freelancing. And thank you so much, Mahmoud. This was such a pleasure.
Yeah, thank you very much. And before we end the discussion, where can people find you, or if there's anything you'd like to share with us, like social media, etc.?
Yeah, check out my book, The Freelance Mindset: Unleashing Your Side Hustles for Better Work, Play, and Life. It's available on Amazon and any other online retailer for books. And find me on my website, joybatra.com, and I'm on all the social media platforms with my name, Joy Batra. That's Batra.
Joy, thank you very much. This was a really interesting discussion, and well, we'll stay in contact.
Yes,
Thank you very
please do.
much.
Thank you so much.